On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Dozens of protesters gathered at the State Capitol yesterday to urge Governor Evers to lift his extended stay-at-home order. Meanwhile, more protests are planned for Friday. What's being called a freedom rally could be attended by thousands of people outside the State Capitol, according to its Facebook page. It's part of the public backlash to the governor's efforts to slow the spread of the coronavirus. So what questions do you have about the pandemic and how state authorities are responding? What do you want to know about the governor's extended order? We're at 800-642-1234. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and she's co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So on Thursday, Governor Evers announced he would be extending the stay-at-home order to May 26th. How did he explain that decision?
He said that, you know, he acknowledged that the stay-at-home order has been tough for folks across the state, but he said we're just not, in his administration's view, in the place where we can lift those restrictions yet. He says we're not, I think the exact phrase he used was, we're not out of the woods just yet. In terms of, you know, the threat of the virus spreading rapidly between people. I think a way that he described it that people really latched onto when he was doing a press conference with reporters on Friday was he talked about easing these restrictions kind of like turning a dial rather than flipping a switch. So he said, while some folks might be ready for that switch to be flipped, it really needs to be more of a, you know, wait and see, assess as they go, and eventually kind of turning that dial slowly to move Wisconsin's shelter in place, safer at home order.
Yeah, we've heard that. Yeah, think of it as a light that's on a dimmer that you slowly, you know, turn on and not a flip of a switch.
Right. Exactly. It's going to be a gradual change when that change does happen. But the message we got last week is that change isn't going to happen, that sort of gradual turning of the dial, until at least May 26th.
How did Republicans react to the extension?
Republicans were not happy at all. I think this is something that, you know, we've heard over the past few weeks, a little bit, you know, some Republicans pushing back and saying they're concerned about the business implications of the shelter at home order. Obviously, businesses being hurt really hard by having to be closed and remain closed during this time. Republicans have raised concerns about that, but I think it really just, it kind of, exponentially increased after the governor announced the extension of the order. Their concerns were very loud, very harsh. They said that the governor has not been transparent about the sort of metrics that he's using when he's weighing whether or not to extend the order. They said the legislature should be more involved in such expansive decisions for the state. And also, I think, interestingly, said that the stay-at-home order shouldn't be as broadly applied as it is. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald pointed out in particular that rural parts of the state haven't been seeing as many cases of the new coronavirus, and so they shouldn't have to be following the same strict safer-at-home guidelines as, say, you know, urban parts of the state, Milwaukee, for example, that we know has had a significant number of cases.
They don't want blanket orders that involve the entire state, that they should be able to curate in areas that aren't as hard hit. How likely are the governor and Republicans headed for another court battle over constitutional powers here?
It seems pretty much inevitable at this point. Republican lawmakers very quickly after the governor released his extension put out statements saying that they were going to look into legislative and legal options to curtail the extension. That was, you know, late last week. After that, not too long after, they kind of focused in on the legal option and confirmed that they were planning on filing a lawsuit with the state Supreme Court this week to challenge the governor's legal authority to issue these safer at home orders, you know, just unilaterally from his administration.
We're talking about Governor Evers' extended stay-at-home order with WPR's Laurel White as our guide. What questions do you have about the order? Do you support an extension? Do you want to see some of the state's restrictions lifted or eased in certain parts of the state? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Randy now, joining us from Portage with thoughts on this. Hi, Randy.
Yes, good morning. Hi, I certainly support the governor. I'm an essential worker. I put myself at risk and my family at risk every day. And I find it very irresponsible and selfish of persons going to protest when it's proven we've reduced the rate from 3.5 of an expansion of 3.5 infections or doubling every 3.5 days to now 12 days because we're adhering to the orders. And my opinion is all these protesters, I think they should have to register at the state before protesting that if they contract the disease, that they will waive their right to any medical care and just suffer through it.
Randy, thank you for the call. Laurel, how have police responded to protesters over the weekend at the Capitol and then also in Brookfield?
You know, this is something that has certainly spurred strong opinions on either side. I think it's interesting and important, really, to note that the Evers administration and kind of the official line on this is that the protesters are certainly allowed to exercise their First Amendment rights. The governor was very clear about that from the outset. He said that he just wanted them to be practicing social distancing guidelines while they were doing so. So there isn't sort of any official, denouncement of the protests from the Evers administration. The governor's actually been welcoming of that. He just wants folks to do what they can to not spread the disease, which is obviously a big concern when people gather in groups. Like you mentioned, it could be thousands of people at the Capitol on Friday, and that's obviously far and away more people than are, advised to get together at this time.
Right. It would be a health threat there. Several Republicans called for the Senate to fire the governor's health secretary designee, Andrea Palm, over this new extension. What are you seeing there? How likely is that?
We never know about things like that until they happen. We obviously saw the state Senate choose not to confirm, but hold a vote on the governor's agriculture secretary, Brad Path. That was a pretty unprecedented action, at least for decades prior to that happening. So it's kind of trodden territory at this point. We know that the Senate can do it and has done it, and there's some appetite to push back on Evers administration officials they don't agree with and use that power that they have to confirm to remove people from office. Two senators in particular, Dave Craig and Steve Noss, have been very vocal about their disapproval of Andrea Palm and how she's been handling this. She, of course, signs all of these orders, these safer at home orders. I think the pushback there is removing someone from that position during a public health crisis. The person that's kind of the head of the agency, obviously steering the ship in a time when they're doing an awful lot.
We're looking at state efforts to slow the spread of the coronavirus in Wisconsin on the State Capitol Report. WPR's Laurel White covers the Capitol. She's our guide to the developments. What are your questions about the legislature's first bill to provide relief during the outbreak? What are you seeking from state lawmakers as they consider more relief proposals? Where should the money go? Be part of this conversation at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with more State Cap and Laurel White right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. State lawmakers last week approved our state's first relief package in response to COVID-19. The bill was more than a month in the making, and Governor Evers signed it into law within hours of its passage in the Senate last Wednesday. So what do you want to know about what the bill does and where the money will flow? What do you want to see lawmakers focus on next with aid to Wisconsinites? Join in, 800-642-1234. We have WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White with us. So, Laurel, aside from the safer at home extension and school closures, what other changes to the orders did the governor announce last week?
So there are a couple small changes. For most folks, the order is going to look much the same as it has for the past several weeks. The changes include kind of an interesting measure. Golf courses are open or will be open again when the new order takes effect. I think it's kind of, as I mentioned, that important to note that the current order is in effect until the 24th. So all of the current rules that we've been living under will be in place until that point. The new order takes effect after that. So golf courses opening back up, as I mentioned, will happen after the 24th. That's something that a number of kind of lawmakers and groups had been pushing for. The governor agreed to that. Some other kind of interesting things. Libraries will be allowed to do curbside pickup. We know restaurants and other places, folks have been able to get food to go. Now they'll be able to get library books curbside. And then, interestingly, some businesses that are not considered essential businesses will be able to start doing what the administration called basic operations. So they'll be able to open back up on a limited basis to fulfill some orders for shipping, things like that, with kind of a skeleton crew. So some places that haven't been able to have any operations at all for the past several weeks will be able to kind of dip their toe in the water a little bit.
Oh, so yeah, if they have like an e-commerce component to the business, that they might be able to fulfill some orders coming in?
Exactly. So they would be able to do deliveries and mailings and some curbside pickup as well, kind of like, you know, I mentioned with the libraries or some restaurants, as you know, have been doing.
We haven't talked about this as much. How are tribal nations affected by this order?
So that is another interesting point. The governor specified that tribal nations are sovereign over their own territory, so they can impose their own restrictions. He reminded people in this order, or his administration did, reminded individuals in this order that that is the case, and people should respect whatever restrictions tribal nations do put into place on their territory.
And
it's
separate from this. He's also encouraging people not to go to their cabins, I understand.
Right. That's been a big part of the conversation. You know, as folks might start thinking about as the weather gets a little bit better, the season changes, going up north to cabins, going to different parts of the state that they frequent seasonally. The governor is discouraging that. The original order restricted travel to certain things, right? People were only allowed to travel to provide care for a family member, for example, do other forms of, kind of like we talked about essential businesses, do forms of essential travel. So a little bit in an offshoot of that, the governor's saying, going to your cabin up north doesn't qualify as essential travel. We need to try to keep people in their geographic areas and contain them as much as possible so we're not spreading the virus to different parts of the state. And it's also important, I think, to mention that a number of rural parts of the state are concerned about the capacity of their health systems. If people who don't live there normally come in and settle down and, you know, obviously, unfortunately, contract the virus, no one wants to have that happen. But if they're there, putting the strain on those rural healthcare systems that don't have as much capacity wouldn't be a good thing.
Yeah, we've heard that out of Door County. We're talking about lawmakers' response to the pandemic with Laurel White as our guide. She's WPR State Capitol reporter. You can join in. What questions do you have about last week's news from Madison? Do you support the relief bill approved by lawmakers? Where do you see a need for more aid and what are your top priorities for future relief bills? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Steve now in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First, I guess want to say that I was at the protest on Saturday in Brookfield, and I couldn't be more proud of the decision that I made to do that. I talked with a lot of folks, and one of the biggest concerns that people have is not just the virus, but really about the lies that Evers has out there. There's plenty of them. But one particular I have not heard the media really ask a question of, at least not the regular media, conservatives have asked it, is we were told the original stay-at-home order was to flatten the curve. I am not a scientist, but I'm good at numbers, and I can read the stats that the curve has been flattened. Why have the goalposts been moved?
Steve, thanks for the call. Steve, there at the protest in Brookfield over the weekend. Laurel, what do we know about flattening the curve if we've achieved it?
So that is definitely a point that folks across the state have been raising. And the governor and the Evers administration addressed that in their press conference last week when they extended the order by saying that it is working. They said shelter in place as we have it and have had it for the past few weeks is working to flatten the curve, to lower that number of, you know, day-to-day increases of the case. But they said it just hasn't been enough yet. We're not, you know, kind of as I mentioned earlier in the hour, we're not out of the woods yet. You can't lift the restrictions just because they're working. We have to get to a place where other things are kind of aligned to make sure that everyone can be safe. Things like having more personal protective equipment, making sure that hospitals do have the capacity, making sure that testing is available. We know that the state has, in addition to, you know, flattening that curve, definitely amped up the testing capacity across Wisconsin. But that's something that needs to, you know, continue to happen, and the administration wants to keep tabs on that and make sure that that's readily available. People have talked about contact tracing and implementing that, and that obviously requires some work to get that system in place as well. So I think the administration is acknowledging that, that argument that people are saying, hey, the curve is flattened, but they're just saying, unfortunately, that flattening in their assessment just hasn't been enough yet to assure that we won't have a spike after the restrictions are lifted, and that basically all that we've been doing up until this point would be undone.
Well, let's take a moment here and look at the relief bill, last Thursday's stay-at-home extension, and then Midwest governors come together to work together on what it would mean to reopen. What are you seeing out of this legislation?
So the legislation is very wide-ranging. It's got a whole bunch of provisions in it. It's something lawmakers worked on for several weeks before releasing it. I think the big headlines there are the extension, or lifting rather, of a waiting period for unemployment benefits in Wisconsin. There had been a 1 week waiting period for folks to get those benefits under this new law that the governor signed very quickly after lawmakers passed it. Individuals wouldn't have to wait that week in order to get their unemployment benefits. They would get that resource more quickly. There are also a broad set of provisions that have to do with insurance and COVID-19. For example, insurers would be required to cover COVID-19 testing. They would not be allowed to charge customers more for out-of-network care. That's something we obviously talk about a lot with insurance. The idea there is that if someone has to go outside of their network because of a capacity issue at their in-network provider, that they wouldn't have to pay more because of that. There are also some provisions in there to prevent insurers from discriminating against someone who has had COVID-19 or may have had COVID-19. So certainly some insurance-related things there, something that's really top of mind for a lot of folks, and some healthcare things as well, including some licensing easements for individuals, easing some of the licensing practices that have been in place. Two of those are pretty interesting. One would allow out-of-state healthcare providers to get a temporary Wisconsin credential if they want to come into the state and provide medical care for individuals. Another would require a temporary credential for retired healthcare workers. So people who have left the workforce but want to come back and provide care, they'd be able to get a temporary credential.
And it sets aside $75 million for unexpected needs that federal dollars don't cover. How they arrived at $75
million? We don't. So that's a number that kind of came out of the debate between lawmakers, and it's certainly a much smaller number than the governor had wanted to appropriate to the state response, and Democrats wanted to appropriate to the state response. But that's what Republican leaders who control the legislature said they thought would be sufficient for the state to offer up to that amount, sort of in concert with the federal dollars that are coming in. You know, the state is set to get about $2 billion from the federal government. So state leaders said $75 million should be good enough to work hand in hand with that federal investment.
Laurel, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter. She's also co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Coming up, State Capitol Report continues with Representative Evan Goyke, a Democrat who represents neighborhoods on the west side of Milwaukee. We'll have more conversation about politics and then a look inside our state prisons. That's right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and I just want to give a big shout-out thank you to everyone who donated during our spring member drive. Support from people like Jim and Menominee sustains the trusted news and information you value on the Ideas Network. To ensure the resources are in place, we fundraise throughout the year, which has also been affected at this time. So if you missed the drive, your gift now at WPR.org is especially important. And thank you so much for your support. Right now, we're looking at Wisconsin's first COVID-19 relief bill, provides support during this public health emergency. It also allows Wisconsin to capture a portion of federal funds from the CARES Act. It's helping unemployed and furloughed workers. So to talk about it, let's bring in Democratic Representative Evan Goyke, who represents part of Milwaukee's West Side. He's a member of the Joint Finance Committee and the Assembly's Corrections Committee. Representative Goyke, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So the governor last week announced he would extend the state's stay-at-home order until the 26th of May. Do you support that extension?
I do. I think we need to continue to watch and listen to experts, watch the data. And what we've seen is we had a steady increase and then a bit of a plateau in our new positive cases and then a spike back up. And that means we've shown that the stay-at-home order can work if we follow it. And we've also shown that if we don't, the rate of positives can go back up. So at this point, I think the data shows that we need to stay strong, stay home, stay safe, and watch the data fall and the new positives fall before we lift the order.
Yeah, and there's modeling out there, different modeling out there from different organizations. And we're watching also the Wisconsin Hospital Association figures looking that, you know, new cases and hospitalizations has basically plateaued since early April. What do you see there?
Well, I think that is a sign that the initial efforts that we undertook paid off. That remember when the initial order was announced, this was not a cure, but a way to, quote, flatten the curve. And I think that's what you're showcasing are the statistics that show that happened, that worked. The challenge in arguing about this sometimes with people that want to see the order removed is that we're arguing the absence of something. So they're saying, hey, this isn't so bad. We should lift the order. Well, it's because of the order that it isn't so bad. So inherent in that is that at least for the time being, that things seem to be working and that they should stay in place.
Well, let's bring in a call now. Dale is joining us from River Falls. Hi, Dale. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I guess the question that I'm really struggling with is just down to basics and brass tacks when we're looking at the uprise and protests and people gathering and such. Is I'm looking at whitehouse.gov, and the 30 days to stop the spread still exists, and that was put in place on April 2nd. So in theory, that goes through May 2nd, and the second bullet point on there says for people to avoid gatherings of 10 people or more. And when I think back, just 2 weeks ago, the vice president and the president were praising Americans for acting on these guidelines. And I'm just really trying to reconcile where people are at, people that are actually, you know, partaking in the protests, et cetera. I'm trying to reconcile, are we under those guidelines or not? What's happened where we were being, Americans were being praised for doing the American thing, following those guidelines, and now all of the protesting, et cetera, seems to fly right in the face of that.
So Dale is wondering about these mixed messages. Representative Goyke?
I find it challenging to reconcile the White House action all the time. But Dale points out something that is, it's very valid. His point is valid. There seems to be a total mixed signals coming out of Washington, D.C., where one tweet on a Monday will say liberate and seemingly suggest to want to open up a state. And then the comments from the president the following day will say that it's too early to open up the, and to go back on the order. And so I don't think that we're going to get a clear signal from this president and from the White House. That's been consistent in his presidency. I think we can trust our Wisconsin public health officials to base their decisions on our information, our data, our cases, our population. And that's who I'm trusting and watching and listening to. I think the other point that Dale brings up is really important about those protesters. I challenge them, and maybe they're listening and they'll call in, about how they would answer his question about the disconnect between what the president is saying, continue, stay at home, can, you know, this additional 30 days, and the protest that was held over the weekend at Brookfield. Many of those people were holding signs in support of the president's reelection, yet seemingly defying his advice on how we handle this pandemic right now. So to the caller, it's a great point. I wish I had better guidance on how to handle what the president says. We often see this mixed messages out of Washington, D.C.
We heard Friday from Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who criticized the governor's extension as an unnecessary one-size-fits-all approach.
For an awful lot of Wisconsin, there is very limited COVID cases, and that is fantastic. But we are putting the same restrictions on a couple who lives in rural Wisconsin that goes to, you know, one grocery store and one gas station as somebody who lives in downtown Milwaukee.
So that was Representative Voss during an interview with WISN. Would you support, Representative Goyke, the state taking a more regional approach instead of a blanket approach to gatherings?
Not at this point, and I underneath some of those words is a very dangerous us versus them mentality, where I think that is a path that Wisconsinites do not want to walk down. You know, I don't think that the speaker is wrong in describing life in rural Wisconsin. The challenge is that if the virus gets into that community, it's going to spread within the entire community very rapidly. The close bonds of small-town rural Wisconsin are maybe what is keeping it safe and free of the virus now. But if it enters, it is exactly the same characteristics that will allow it to spread very rapidly. And so that's the point. It's prevention. And I think that it's dangerous for us to say that one side or one community has a certain order and others do not. And we have seen flare-ups. If you remember when Wisconsin first experienced its outbreak, that, for example, Fond du Lac, which is a smaller city was one of the hotspots and was able to plateau its numbers. And so we're going to see that happen where certain communities see flare-ups or hotspots. And the order, I think, should be in place for all of us. And again, I really caution about going down a path where we try to divide up the state. And it is not an us versus them virus. It's an us together against the spread of the virus.
We're discussing the pandemic with State Representative Evan Goyke. He's a member of the legislature's influential Budget Writing Committee, Joint Finance. Do you live in the Milwaukee area? Where do you see the greatest need for support from state lawmakers? What are your top priorities right now? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Representative, before we move on, Assembly Speaker Voss also said on WISN that Republicans were preparing to challenge the extension in court this week. Do you agree the administration is overstepping its legal authority? What about court proceedings here?
No, I think this is an extension of a battle that has gone on between the Speaker and the Evers administration that began the day after Republicans lost the statewide election. To frame it appropriately for everyone, it began with what we called the lame duck session, which changed the balance of power between the executive and legislative branch. It continued through the budget and legislative process. And the executive branch is who execute government. They are positioned to respond to emergencies like this. That is the structure of our government. And the fact that there's a Democrat in the executive branch in Wisconsin state government has frustrated Speaker Voss for 2 years. And this is, I think, an extension of what we saw, how we saw the session begin. We are lucky to have Governor Evers and his administration at the helm. I don't know what it would be like without his leadership and the decisive action that they took on a whole host of different fronts. And, you know, I think people need to just take a breath and realize that this is an unprecedented moment. You might not like the guy. You might not have voted for him, but his leadership has helped us. We've had seen results of the stay-at-home order, and it is a time to work together, not a time to spend taxpayer money litigating in court over who's got the say. It is a time to work together and not work against each other.
What about the calls for the secretary designee, Andrea Palm, to step down and to not be confirmed?
Well, she should have been confirmed in the first place. So the calls for her to be essentially fired come after this unprecedented session where the Senate, fired a secretary and have not confirmed a number of other appointees or nominees. I have met and worked with Secretary Palm. She is an incredible woman. She is incredibly smart. We are lucky to have someone like her at the helm who is working day after day, 24/7, listening to the experts, making the decisions we need to stay safe.
On the State Capitol Report, we're talking with Evan Goyke, a Democratic representative in the Assembly. He's a former public defender and member of the Assembly's Corrections Committee. You can join in. How do you want state corrections officials to respond to the outbreak? How do you want to see the relief bill made in your area? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute. More State Cap here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're looking at Wisconsin's first COVID-19 relief bill that provides support. It also allows Wisconsin to capture a portion of federal funds from the CARES Act. What do you think of the relief package? How will it affect you and your business, your livelihood? Where do you want relief funding to flow? We're at 800-642-1234. We have Democratic Representative Evan Goyke, who stays with us. Representative, let's take a look at the legislation that was signed last week by Governor Evers. It basically amounts to about 24 pages of changes to state law. What stands out? What changes are most important to you?
The two most important pieces and why I supported the bill First is the suspension of a one-week waiting period for unemployment benefits. That's something that we Democrats believe should be repealed and that unemployed workers should get their benefits without having to wait a week. In this moment, however, it means that the federal government will be sending more money to unemployed workers, and they will cover that 1 week. And so this was a requirement to pull down tens of millions of dollars of federal money for unemployed workers. And it's going to go directly to their checking accounts, which is huge. The second piece that's really important is that there were suspensions of challenges to enroll in Medicaid, like the new law requires monthly premiums or a copayment if someone goes to the emergency room. And the CARES Act required that those hurdles be removed. And if they were removed, which they were in the legislation, then we as a state would receive what's going to amount to about $50 million a month in Medicaid payments or additional Medicaid payments from the federal government. And what that does is it allows our state tax dollars to be freed up to be used elsewhere. Those two pieces alone are huge. And as you said, there were a number of other provisions in the bill, but those are the two most important provisions that will have the biggest impact statewide.
It also creates a $75 million pot of money that lawmakers can dip into for unexpected needs. And as a member of the Budget Writing Committee, how would you prioritize that money?
Well, that's a great question. And I want to make sure to be clear at the beginning that the bill, when it was first drafted, gave that committee, the Joint Finance Committee, the power to reduce or to cut expenditures. That provision was removed pursuant to negotiations. So this is not this money up to $75 million does not come out of public schools. It isn't going to be cut from some other important investment. And so that was a very positive change. We're beginning now. We're working with the Evers administration to see where federal dollars can be spent that came to the state through the CARES Act. And where we see one of our first priorities out of the Assembly Democratic Caucus is something we're calling healthcare heroes. And this is to ensure that people in the healthcare industry, whether hospital, clinic, et cetera, have the necessary PPE, that they are provided hazard pay, that they have unemployment compensation if they get sick from their exposure. And we think as a first step, we recognize these essential workers that are still going to work every day and on the front lines of this outbreak. And from there, we want to work with the Evers administration to see where did the federal CARES Act leave holes in our state priorities. And so you're going to see this week, I think, some of those priorities outline as we move forward. An important date last week, we believe there was more information coming from the federal government on how the CARES money can be spent by the Evers administration. And again, as we see, if there are gaps, that's where we believe that $75 million should be spent. But we know at the very least that a priority should be our healthcare heroes.
So let's look at prisons now. Earlier this month, you called on Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr to provide clear leadership in how prisons should handle the pandemic. Is that not happening right now?
I think that the Secretary Carr has shown clear leadership. I think what I intended in that release is that the more information we can provide to individuals that are incarcerated and their family about what steps will be taken and when, it will help everyone. We have seen a flood of calls to my office with people that are rightly very scared about their loved ones that are in custody right now. And it is the release that we put out was not a criticism on the actions that the department has taken, but a call for continued communication to individuals and their families so that that there's complete transparency on what's happening. Because as you can imagine, you if your loved one is in custody and the only access to information you have is a news report saying that it's very dangerous if the virus gets in a prison, you'd rightly be very scared and you'd want to know exactly what that institution's going to do to keep your loved one safe. So that was the purpose of that. We've seen COVID-19. You've seen positives in local jails as well as a
We're having some difficulty with some pauses here talking with State Representative Evan Goyke, a Democrat from Milwaukee. Representative, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Okay, yes, good. Well, let's take a call here for a moment. Rita is joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Rita.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I guess first of all, I appreciate all of our elected officials, whether I voted for them or not. It is an extremely difficult time to try to make decisions on so many unknowns. My concern is some of our people who feel like they're in prisons, not in an incarcerated way, but the care systems being denied access to their families in a very critical time. So I know a lot of times the prison systems, they've had contingencies, plans all along, and I appreciate that, and they practice them, so that's very important. I just want to hear more on how the emotional considerations are giving to society. I just hear statistics, and we are not statistic people. We're relational people. Thank you.
Rita, thank you for the call. Representative, what is the emotional toll there, and are people in prisons getting that support?
Well, I think the caller is right that's a unique situation for people in custody, but all of us statewide and the different emotional tolls it takes with all of us. The Department of Corrections has opened up on resources within their power, phone calls, more media, books, library access, et cetera, so that individuals have, more ways to connect and more ways to keep themselves productive and so that they're not just sitting in isolation. But again, it's a big challenge when they're restricting movement. And so it's a difficult time for people in the institutions. The Department of Corrections is doing everything they can safely, but they do have to curtail some of the group or work release, that's just a reality of the situation, that they have to restrict the access or the exposure, because if the virus gets inside a prison, it would spread. There's no social distancing with inside a prison.
Well, very quickly here, the first relief package came last week. What is the legislature doing next? What's your next priority?
Well, you'll see action. The Democrats in the legislature were unanimous in calling on the legislature to act in additional ways. You will see this week for next steps. I mentioned and outlined one of our first priorities will be healthcare heroes, getting our frontline healthcare workers the resources and the hazard pay that they deserve. I think that's a priority that everyone can relate to. First responders, making sure that everyone that's out there on the front lines is safe and is compensated justly for what they're doing during this time. And stay tuned. We're going to be releasing more information this week as we work with the Evers administration as federal resources are coming to the state.
Representative, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Evan Goyke, a Democratic representative in the state assembly, represents part of Milwaukee. Just ahead, we move from the coronavirus outbreak in Wisconsin to a broader view of global warming. A climate journalist explains how our warming planet could bring challenges for decades to come. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.